We're not going to take it anymore. The people want change. Fentanyl is a sad but good driving issue. And you may recall last week we had a news conference on this. And let the victims talk. Problem today is victims don't really have, their families don't have, you don't talk to the real victim of the crime. You have to talk to their families. That's the voice that I think has been heard. And so a little bit of procedural maneuvering, right. And these bills were going to be brought to the floor. And they said, wait a minute, we'll have a hearing. Hopefully some of these bills will move. And it's open season. We've bipartisan, bicameral. Let's just move some of these public safety bills.
All right. Hello and welcome again to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Today, we're glad to be joined by Assemblywoman Diane Dixon. Diane, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I am delighted to be here, Jared. Thank you.
Yeah, it's definitely great. So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of where you're from?
Sure. I've spent a career in government relations or politics, really, a business. And I finished the business career. I was doing government relations for a corporate business global business, and had a great career, global travel, global government relations, as well as other marketing and financial work, and stepped away from that. And that was in Los Angeles or Pasadena, California, and then moved to Orange County. And in my community, Newport Beach, there was an open seat for city council. And I thought, if not now, when? If not me, who? So I filed my papers and thought I was just going to really serve my 8 years, assuming I was reelected.
Yeah.
And I did, as well as included in those 8 years, 2 years as mayor of Newport Beach. It's a great role. It's a great community role where local government really works.
Right.
And people see that their local government can be responsive. I enjoyed it immensely and thought that would be as far as I would go. And then in 2018, when there was a big change in legislature and the Congress, I said, what's happening here? and then I think I was mayor in that same period of time, 2019. And we began to see at the council level on our agendas every week, we had to change our ordinances, our municipal codes, because a mandate from Sacramento, it's primarily housing. It really started with the ADUs, and this was the trickle thing, and then it became a tsunami, dozens of bills. And I said, what is going on? And, well, this is Sacramento, and because of 2018, this is what we were dealing with as Republicans were a super minority party by this point. And I said, who's going to run and go to Sacramento? Nobody put their hand up. And I said, someone's got to go and just represent local government, represent business, represent safe communities and public safety and education and better education, all those, I call them list of horribles, as well as homeless is probably topping the list. And no one put their hand up. And I said, well, I'm going to go. And so here I am. And so I ran in 2020 and came this close to winning by about 1,000 votes. And I wasn't done yet, and so I'd do it again. And what was redistricting helped.
Right.
So my district is about plus five Republican. Mm. So I'm very proud of my district. It's Seal Beach, Huntington Beach, Newport Beach, Laguna Beach, and it goes inland to Laguna Hills, Laguna Woods, Aliso Viejo, and Lake Forest. It's a wonderful, wonderful collection.
Rough areas there, huh?
Well, they are really a microcosm. They experience a microcosm of all the problems in California. We've got homeless in all those communities. We've got crime in those communities. Mm-hmm. We've got challenges of business and surviving businesses. Public safety, as I said. Education issues. People want the best for their children. So it really is kind of a little snapshot of what everyone is concerned about in California. Fentanyl is the number one issue as we speak today. We've got issues. In fact, I just talked to somebody that their brother's son in the district died of fentanyl yesterday. So it's every day. So these are issues that I ran on to just bring common sense. I have a 40-year business career, so I really think like a business person, and how Many of these bills that I experience on the committees I serve on, especially judiciary and business and professionals, that how they affect business. And it concerns me that the ramifications or repercussions of potential new laws, how it affects business and jobs.
Right.
So I want to be a voice for that and local government. I mean, a lot of people here who represent their districts have served in local government. And that's wonderful because local government needs a strong voice because there are many, many ideas that Sacramento thinks local government should do. Right. And I say, wait a minute, have you thought about what this is going to do and how this is much is going to cost
right.
or how a small city staff is going to deal with this new mandate? So anyway, I'm here and hopefully representing and serving those issues well, and I enjoy it. And I'm looking forward to several more years.
Yeah. It's interesting. So I think before you were elected, you worked in government relations, right?
Correct.
You got to travel the world and see different governments and how things work. Is that right?
Yes. And always came back to find the best government with its flaws and all. You know? Winston Churchill once said, you think everybody else has a better government, and then you realize democracy is pretty good.
Right.
But yeah, I work for a company that was an industrial manufacturing company, so I really have a sense about manufacturing and the problems we have in California with not encouraging manufacturing to stay in California. It's a real significant issue. Just to digress, it's manufacturing jobs that provide middle income wages. And when manufacturing started to be discouraged from operating in California, aerospace, automotive, other types of manufacturing, those jobs which allowed people to buy middle-class homes are gone. They've gone to other states. And so what replaced that is a service industry, which pays minimum wage or slightly better. And you can't buy a home in California. And quality of homes and affordability is a huge issue, and it's very important to all of us. So anyway, yes, in business, global company, I used to say I did government relations from Sacramento to Shanghai. Very different in some ways not so different.
Right.
I won't go into any more detail, but I learned a lot in Western Europe.
Right.
And that's another long story too, but as an American company doing business in Western Europe, I think there are a lot of lessons that we as legislators can appreciate what we may not want to do from a business standpoint.
Right.
Many companies today won't put a plant in France, beautiful country. The Netherlands is very difficult. Germany is very difficult. A lot of people don't really understand, Americans don't really understand the rules of operating in another country. And America is probably still, not to be so patriotic, but America is the best place. And that's why we are the most successful country in the world is because our laws have enable business to grow. And we want to have safe working environments, but we want our companies to grow too.
What are some of your more memorable experiences kind of traveling around and dealing with different governments?
Well, the business side of that, I use France as an example. The company I work for had three manufacturing plants in France. And as companies evaluate, and they'd been there for many decades, evaluate where business is and the cost of shipping, and so evaluating where to locate or to downsize a manufacturing plant. Well, in France at the time, now maybe I haven't followed it in a few years, but a company, French or American, could not even announce, here we have a 60-day WARN Act if you're going to close a manufacturing plant in the United States. In France, you need a 2-year notice, and you must keep those employees on your payroll for 2 extra years.
4 years?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
And some countries more, and then continue to pay all kinds of benefits indefinitely. So the cost of doing business, and because it's a social welfare system. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you see what Macron's trying to do in France just by extending employment years to 2 more years from 60 to 62, I think. So it's very difficult. In fact, one of my takeaways from those years, many wonderful colleagues who are French or German or Dutch, and they'd be working for an American company in those countries, and I'd have long conversations They'd be critical of Americans that we work too hard because they do enjoy their 5 or 6 weeks vacation every year. But on the other hand, they want to work for an American company because they felt that innovation is a priority and growth is a priority. In fact, I was just thinking about this the other day. When we talk about Europe and talk about the United States, not to get too in the weeds on economics, but the average rate of growth in the United States, but for a recession, it should be about 3 to 5% a year in terms of the GDP. In Europe, for all the years that I was going to Europe and watching the GDP, because that affected our sales, our company's sales, it's like 1 or 2%, maybe 2, maybe 2, but it's always 1%. And I mean, that's not a growing economy. And and people want to work for a company who that grows and is profitable. So it's economic policy and government policy, and it's, I just believe the more people have jobs, the more, the better their life is.
You know, this is interesting. You know, we've had Lance Hastings on and the manufacturers and, you know, had some of the problem solvers on, and like manufacturing has always been important to California. You know, I think we're the third largest economy now. Pretty impressive. Kind of your experience, you know, your experience in this area, like what are we doing well and what do we need to do better to kind of keep going?
I see just in the 4 months I've been here, many pieces of legislation are not thinking about business owners. And it's okay to think about employees. I'm not against employees. We want employees. We want highly trained, capable employees who are making a good salary. But we're making it so difficult. I mean, as I said a moment ago, manufacturing in California has largely exited. Some new information that I'm learning, now I can't quantify this, but this is what I've been hearing, on the new energy jobs, whether it's the windmills or the solar or whatever the new, many of that supply, this is what you don't read about it, the supply chain to the new energy, low energy, electric energy sources, they're out of state. The better paying jobs, the supply chain jobs have moved to Arizona and Nevada to supply into California because that's where it's, it befuddles my mind why people don't understand why you continue to impose higher costs and higher regulations on business. You know who pays for that? They think, well, charge business. Business can pay for it. Where does it show up? In consumer prices. Every cost you, regulatory cost you put on business, it just gets passed through the cost of goods sold and prices go up. And we're living in a highly inflationary period right now of all this money that's been poured in. And who suffers? It's the people and the lower income people, especially. I have a bill that can't get out of committee that would suspend the gas or would give the governor permission to suspend the automatic increase every July 1st of increasing the gas tax. I think what surprises me the most in terms of where California is going is I didn't realize that it's an, I did not know until I arrived here. It's really, it's not a secret. It's a spoken strategy that in everything to implement new climate directed, and I'm okay with those goals, but let's not destroy ourselves in the process. The goal is to make life miserable in cars, make the cost of operating a car too expensive, so people will be forced to seek alternative means of transportation or buy an electric vehicle. But electric vehicles are pretty much out of the price range of the average person. So there was a bill this morning in Judiciary that would allow apartment owners going forward to not, or apartment renters, tenants, to choose not to have a parking space in their apartment, then therefore their rent would be less. But I asked the question, okay, that's great if they don't have a car and it's near a transit center and they could take a bus to work. Couple problems. Number one, they may still have a car. This is still Southern California. In urban environments, transit is not that plentiful. They'll just end up parking on the street, and that creates its own problems. But also, if you're in manual labor, you're a carpenter, you're a painter, where are you going to haul all your equipment on the bus? It just doesn't make any, we're not there yet. And I just think we're imposing so many major transformative changes on society without having the necessary infrastructure to really support it. And in the meantime, I hear nothing but problems related to our infrastructure, whether it's electricity, whether it's roads. And we're so single-minded on the new energy policies, which is okay in the long term. But let me shift gears and give you a real-world small business example, okay? You're familiar with the California Air Resources Board.
Right.
Okay. So before I became very knowledgeable about CARB, I have a constituent business owner in my district in Newport Beach. Have you ever been to Newport Beach?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever ridden the Balboa Ferry?
Yep.
Okay. Well, the owner, who is the third generation family owner of the three ferries that go 800 feet across from Balboa Island to Balboa Peninsula, called me. This was in January when I really just arrived, when I was home for the weekend. He said, Diane, I've got to talk to you. Okay. So I met him for coffee. I said, what's going on? And he said, well, I guess I'm going to have to go out of business. I said, what are you talking about? And then he proceeds to tell me that the California Air Resources Board has mandated that all small vessel ferries of his size must convert to electric engines by December 31st, 2025. And now we're 2023,
right.
Okay, a year and a half away. And I'm aware of the issue generally because as a mayor, I remember writing a letter on behalf of the commercial fishermen who have their boats, fishing boats in Newport Harbor, and they sought and succeeded to get a delay and an exemption because the technology does not exist.
Yeah.
And so they were successful in getting a delay until 2035. And I said to Mr. Beek, I remember this issue from a couple of years ago. I wrote a letter. Did you participate in that? He said they wouldn't listen, or he didn't do it right, or it was too much complex. I mean, he's just a small little
right.
business. So it didn't happen. And only three vessels. He couldn't find two things. There was no technology to address to that small of a vessel in that kind of space. And number two, he would require an entirely different vessel designer because there's no market for his boats,
right.
his ferries. So it's a special design concept for the fuel source as well as for the design to fit in because it would not fit into the current design of the current ferry. So he was either going to face, well, he still is now, faced with spending about $2 million to have that designed, and then the technology doesn't exist. And so I've connected him with the CARB folks, and they're being responsive, but his application is not formalized yet, so we'll see what happens. He will go out of business at 2025 because he's not going to spend $2 million.
It's a lot of ferry rides.
Yeah. Well, in fact, ironically, several reasons that the ferry is a viable current. And his diesel engines meet current CARB standards. I guess they've made adjustments all these years to limit the emissions and such. The Coastal Commission, which Newport Beach and all coastal cities are subject to the authority of, every entity must, if they have an application before the Coastal Commission, must provide low-cost visitor-serving amenities. Well, mm-hmm. the cost of a ferry is $1.50 per car. That's probably one of the cheapest things you could do in Orange
right.
County is ride the ferry. If he had to amortize that cost of his investment, I mean, $20, $30 a ride across the ferry, he does not want to do that, plus just the cost of him coming up with millions of dollars. Even if he got some form of grant, it will not cover 100% of his costs. Also, the alternative to having a ferry, which has been there since 2019, over 100 years, is people have to drive 15 miles around from Balboa Island to Balboa Peninsula, and that's going to use up more gasoline than the
right.
23 gallons of gas he uses every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I said this in a meeting of the Problem Solvers Caucus, and I said, do people realize how this distills down? We have these goals, but then how does it affect real business? Now I've talked to real business, even the California Truckers Association. They told me this months ago, when I was talking to them about the 2035 deadline and with cars, with automobiles, is there truck technology? He said, no. I said, well, what did you say when you were discussing this in hearings? They said, well, your business, you'll figure it out. I strongly believe in the marketplace helping
right.
to figure out new technologies. That will happen by putting these draconian deadlines. To me, it's problematic because small business, big business, I think, can figure it out, I suppose. They have the wherewithal to do it. And there are a lot of creative businesses out there who are falling into line and figuring out the investments that they need to make to be energy efficient and zero emission. So that's great. But the small businesses, I'm worried about them. And we hear about that all the time leaving California because they're just, they can't conform or they're just at a loss of how to do it. Then there are other issues that are not climate change related, just relating to the cost of doing business in California for small business, the PEGA laws, people be sued all the time. Right. You know, it's just business feels, and I'm not the Chamber of Commerce at all, and they have their own spokespeople, but business just feels that they're the target, and we want to encourage jobs, we want to encourage expansion, we want to encourage growth. And I think it's a challenge to do business in California. Even look at what Silicon Valley's laying people off.
Right. You know, it's interesting. You started talking about how you first came aware of maybe running for up here in Sacramento was 2018, mm-hmm. right when all these new housing mandates yes. come in. And of course, you live in an area where we'd all love to live. Especially in the last few years, it's become crazy expensive to live
yeah.
kind of in your district. You have all these new housing mandates. You know, we see, for example, Huntington Beach in the news all the time being mm-hmm. sued for not meeting these housing mandates. Kind of what is the answer for housing in your district and kind of,
I've got lots of ideas.
Let's
How
hear
much
them.
Time do you have? Well, first of all, I've been through the housing element for the city of Newport Beach. It took about 2 years, cost over $3 million to pay consultants. All these cities, mm-hmm. that's who's doing well on this whole housing endeavor is the consultants to the cities.
Housing consultants.
Yeah, because cities just don't have this. I mean, on a daily basis, they're dealing with projects and development planning and everything.
Right.
They can't get into the depth of all this. So I'm very familiar with the housing element. Newport Beach did successfully get their housing element approved within the deadline. And involved a lot of community involvement. Newport Beach had 4,800 mandated units, housing units to be zoned, so it's now zoned for that. But we've got the Pacific Ocean. We have Banny Ranch that's been taken away from a development. When I first got on the council, we had a developer proposed 1,500 housing units, half of which would have been affordable. Well, the Coastal Commission, this is before the housing crisis, Coastal Commission denied it unanimously. So now it's a public reserve, and it's beautiful land, but no housing will be on that. We have an airport on the east side, and we have wildfire areas on kind of
right.
the south side.
So where do you build if you have no land? What's the
you zone in areas where there's currently buildings, commercial buildings, primarily in the airport area, and then some other areas we've identified, but primarily the airport area where we will have multifamily units. And so that will happen in cities where cities don't build housing. It's developers.
Right.
So it's the cost of land in coastal cities, not only,
not cheap.
I mean, this is the argument Huntington Beach makes. It's expensive to build. And then the return on that investment is not through affordable housing tenants. It's through the market rate
right.
tenants. And so there has to be a balance. So I'm concerned going forward and talking about housing. I served on SCAG. Do you know what SCAG is? Southern California Area Governments. It's a government, you know, there's all these local regional governmental units that have elected officials sitting on their board. And SCAG includes Orange County, Riverside, San Bernardino, and Los Angeles, and Ventura, I think. Yes, Ventura. Anyway, I learned something with talking with some of the Los Angeles people from Central Los Angeles, were primarily the minority communities of Central Los Angeles. And this woman who's a member of SCAG, an elected official, really opened my eyes. She said, we don't want apartments. And this is what's going to be built, 3 million apartments in the state of California, because you cannot build generational family wealth in apartments. People pay rent. They don't pay their mortgage.
Right.
And so they're not saving and building homeowner equity. And she was very outspoken and was convincing to a lot of people, but nonetheless, this is a direction we're headed, that people need to buy homes, affordable homes to buy, of course. We have to make that possible, part of the housing mix. And I'm concerned that the emphasis is on rentals and apartments, and people will be not able to buy homes. I mean, that to me is to not be able to fulfill
that's where we are now, right?
The fundamental aspect of home ownership in America. But one of the issues, having followed this now for several years, that has not been fixed, and this is a classic argument between environmentalists and housing advocates, is the environmentalists and the housing advocates do not agree on CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. And I know from watching these projects go through housing or commercial development, residential commercial development, the lawsuits that challenge whether the residential groups or other businesses or labor unions have challenged under various prevailing wage issues, slowing down the process. So who pays for that? The developer pays the legal bills.
Right.
Some of these projects are delayed for years all over California. And who pays for that? It's in the cost of the housing. So one of the reasons as many studies have been done on this since CEQA was enacted purely to watch out for the environmental impact and mitigate the environmental impact, which is good. But it became a way for community groups to delay or oppose development.
Right.
In their
it's a weapon and a shield. Right?
Yeah,
right.
And it added to the cost of housing. And so there, before you know it, I mean, I heard a year ago that it probably added $20,000 or $30,000 to the cost of the average cost of a home. Who knows what the number is now? But someone has to pay for that. So, and then you've got another housing crisis looming. In fact, it's in the papers in Orange County this week that because the wildfire areas, and this touches my district down in Lake Forest and Aliso Viejo, is you have a lot of wildfire areas.
Right.
And these homeowners cannot get insurance because the cost of homeowners insurance has risen because of the wildfires in Northern California. So we've got a lot of imbalance there on just factors. And there's nobody's fault on that. I mean, that's not a law as much as the circumstances of wildfires and how that insurance companies have left California because of the high risk. So there's some issues fundamental that are fixable and difficult to fix, but need to be addressed instead of incrementally one bill at a time, but really looking back or what are the factors that really contribute to the housing crisis in California?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know. You see this kind of dialogue on social media and people are like, on one hand, there's no right that everyone should be able to live in Newport Beach. But on the other hand, you need, people work. They should be able to live somewhere near they work. Right. To have a community, you need, housing for all spectrums of life. But as you said, there's only so much space and so many areas to go. So what are the kind of some of the answers, is it building up? Condos?
Oh, you have to go up.
Condos?
And I mean, while there are height limits, this is what communities will be facing is that with density bonus laws that are currently laws, I mean, a developer can go higher. And cities, this is one of the reasons I ran, not so much specifically on these bills, but the entire power of local government to decide how they want to build out their cities. That is disappearing.
Right.
And so the laws preempt local control and density bonus laws. That's one of the new laws in the last few years that was changed. And so a builder could come in and get bonus points for the higher percentage of affordable units. They could go higher, have less setback, when requires communities decide, well, no building should be closer than 10 feet from the road. Well, if a developer gets a density bonus, he could come up to 3 feet from the road. So it just change. It will change things. We all need more housing. I want quality housing. I certainly have my daughter lives out of state. Many friends whose children want to buy homes where they grew up in Orange County, and it clearly is a challenge. I hear this every day. So it's fixable, but we've never touched CEQA.
Right.
And I do trust cities. I mean, cities want to new generational population. You need to refresh the population. That makes communities strong. I don't know anybody in our cities that say no to development. It's just let's get it done in a reasonable manner and not destroy what we have. And also, people feel strongly about property rights. You have a nice home here that you've had for 50 years and then somebody sells a home to a developer that now can build whatever they want. And you have a small ranch style home here, and it's now a 5-story apartment building next to you. What does that do to that person's property values? These are questions there are no answers to, and nobody cares about the answers.
Right. No, there's no, I guess there's no good answer.
Well, it's by right now. Right. Those are terms that, and you heard the term builder's remedy when cities don't submit their, they don't get their plan approved, the housing element, and the builders could come in. That's in already in state law. That's been there for like 50 or 60 years. They could build whatever they want. We're going to see a lot of different changes. I think two people are more, have resigned themselves that we've got to do better, clearly. We all want people to be able to afford to live in California. That's our future. But let's be real about what are some of the consequences driving the high cost of housing.
Yeah. Kind of, I guess another big issue that's kind of been, I guess, must-see TV for the Assembly this year has been the Public Safety Committee.
Yes.
Public safety issues. A lot of issues on fentanyl and early release.
Is it must-see? Are like people talking about it?
You and all your Republican colleagues haven't made much headway, but are making headlines in the Public Safety Committee.
Well, so. It's a great strategy. We've all come together on this. I mean, it's not just Republicans. The Democrat bills are in the mix as well, and they're being held up in the Senate as well as the Assembly.
Right.
And it's like, we're not going to take it anymore. The people want change. Fentanyl is a good driving, sad, but good driving issue. And you may recall last week we had a news conference on this, and let the victims talk. Problem today is victims don't really have, their families don't have, you don't talk to the real victim of the crime. You have to talk to their families, need a voice. And that's the voice that I think has been heard hopefully by the Democrats. And so a little bit of procedural maneuvering, right, and these bills were going to be brought to the floor. And they said, wait a minute, we'll have a hearing. So the hearing is this Thursday after session. And hopefully some of these bills will move. And it's open season. We've bipartisan, bicameral. Let's just move some of these public safety bills. It really, I mean, I've learned a lot being here in four months, and I have had three bills go through public safety. They've been defeated by on a party line vote, but at least they are available.
Got hearings.
And got hearings, yeah, and will come back for reconsideration. But, you know, we all want people who have committed crimes to be rehabilitated. That is our, we all agree on that goal, but we also want to prevent crimes from happening, and our laws are a deterrent to crimes being committed, and we have weakened laws. Interesting. I don't know if you read the Orange County Register. They, the opinion section last Sunday had a full page on what's the real story on public safety in California? Because people are talking about it now. Mm-hmm. This is a good thing. What's happening to fixing? Why do we have crime? And why can't we get this fixed? And,
right,
and the real reason is there are a lot of laws that have changed in the last 10 years, starting with AB 109 and Prop 47, then 57. And 57 was really to emphasize rehabilitation, reducing classification of crimes and improving rehabilitation, all for it. But the consequences are the penalties, the criminals, wherever they're from,
right,
a lot of them are coming in Orange County specifically. They're coming from South America. And they know that they could smash and grab. And this is what the police have told me in Orange County. A couple of things. They know they won't be arrested because if they are, they're in and out. But some cities in California just issue for the $950 and lower, $950 and lower, they just get a ticket.
Right.
And they never show up. So it's like, come get us. There's no laws. Also, many of these are gangs from South America. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about inner city urban people. These are gang people who have realize how they can work the system. So they come in somehow, and because they don't have a driver's license, they don't have any ID, and there's no fingerprints, they have no record. So they're first-time offenders, and they come over the border, they commit crimes, or they exist, and they target all these crimes, and they get rental cars, or they steal cars, and so they're driving through neighborhoods with luxury automobiles, so nobody realizes that they are part of a gang, and they're committing these home invasions. not only in Newport Beach, but I hear this all around Orange County. So people who are of the criminally inclined realize where we're weak. And in terms of not enforcement, we've got police out there.
Right.
It's not an enforcement problem. It's just the nature of laws. We don't have the teeth in our laws.
Right. No deterrence effect. Yeah.
And then people, I have a bill, AB 15, one of my three bills, just to bring transparency to people who are being incarcerated and rehabilitated, and then they are early released. And so you recall, of course, the tragedy in Sacramento a year ago, where six people were killed over by the stadium. Well, this came to my attention by the Sacramento Bee, who was trying to did a PRAR on the person who committed those murders, those homicides, and found out that he had been in prison on a 10-year sentence and released after 5 years, and he committed homicide. And the Sacramento Bee wanted to know what was his rehabilitation program. That's a technical term for Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. There are programs, education, vocation, and life improvement. It's data. It's not getting into HIPAA or private information. It's just really, did they complete their programs?
Right.
And we can't get information out of the Department of Corrections to understand. And that's just where I think the chair of the Public Safety Committee and I do agree that he wants people rehabilitated, of course. He wants to get data out of the department. Mm-hmm. So everybody wants to know how.
So did the bill make it out of committee?
And no, but at least it's going to be reconsidered. I figure that's a half a win.
Yeah. So, as a new member, as a Republican member, doing bills isn't easy. What bills have you gotten out of committee and kind of moving through the process?
Well, some that my strategy really was to kind of do bills that could get approved by both houses.
Right.
So
bipartisan.
Just yesterday in transportation, I think it's AB 256 or 276, and it moved out of transportation yesterday, that allows for a 30-day grace period after the due date on your annual automobile renewal, mm-hmm. that you won't be cited. The driver won't be cited for 30 days if they haven't gotten their tag or they forgot to pay. They have a 30-day kind of grace period. And that got out of committee.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was very pleased about that. Right. Also, another bill got out of committee. What was that bill? AB 276. So grace period was 256, the teen driving. Both of these were unanimous, to raise the age to 21 where a young person cannot drive with a cell phone in any way. It can be in their glove compartment and they could use the Bluetooth, but it cannot be something that they're holding. If they are cited for another reason, the officer stops them for another reason and notices that the cell phone is visible and in use, then that person will be cited additionally. Mm-hmm. But it, again, is to combat teen driving. And I heard from parents all over saying this is great because the teens don't feel the pain of citations when they're distracted. A lot of data about this, that when your eyes are off for a nanosecond on your cell phone, it's equivalent to driving blindfolded the length of a football field.
Scary.
Yeah, it is. So, and many of the accidents are not only fatal and car to car, but off the sidewalk, off the curb and onto sidewalk. So those two bills got unanimous support. Another bill that's really special to me is AB 511, which allows for a voluntary checkoff on personal income tax returns to designate a disease, in this case, ALS. And it got through Rev and Tax, and so it goes to appropriations next, so we'll see how that fares. But that's personally important. To me, interestingly enough, there are a handful of legislators who have been touched by ALS. My mother died of ALS 20 years ago this Thursday, so it's ever present in my mind. And if I could do anything to help some of these orphan diseases, because there's just a small universe of people who get the disease and it's a death sentence, and then they pass away, and then there are fewer people, and then there's another group of people. So it's just the families who become advocates for these orphan diseases because the pharmaceutical industry goes after cancer and breast cancer, and those are important, absolutely, but they get the billions of dollars to support the research. orphan diseases, and there are many as I've gotten into this, and ALS is one, it just helps for the research and it will make a difference.
Right.
So there are good stories. And let me just say, I enjoy many positive relationships with my Democrat colleagues. I talk with Reggie a lot. He's a Trojan.
Yeah, you guys are both Trojans.
Yeah. And so.
So what year did you graduate from USC?
Yeah, I went to SC.
What year? What year did you go?
73. Did you?
No, I didn't.
So he's at big SC. Also, he
is that right with Marcus Allen?
Yeah, well, there was OJ. Actually, OJ was when I was there. And we have other kind of common interests from Los Angeles. Mm. I was in Los Angeles for many years. So, but I enjoy very—
Help a fellow Trojan out, Reggie,
yes,
right?
Yes, that that's what I think.
Yeah.
I think
fight on. That's what Reggie said, reconsideration, fight
yeah,
on.
Yeah, so okay. That was okay. And then others— I enjoy them. They are willing to listen, and we have good yeah. conversations. And I enjoy. I came up here to do common sense legislating.
Right.
And I'm more of a pragmatic, common sense type person. So let's find a. That's the business side of me. Is find a solution. There's a solution here somewhere. Right. Let's fix it.
As I tell Reggie, I went to the real USC. I went to Santa Clara, which is older than USC.
Yeah.
So we actually have title to USC, but we've let you guys have
there's
it.
There's a University of South Carolina, too. So we all have to fight for USC.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Diane, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well,
definitely learned a lot. And good luck to you the rest of this session.
And, well, thank you for all you do to just shine a light on what we're all doing. Yeah. And a lot of hard workers here. Everyone's a hard worker, and everyone in their own way wants to do
right.
good. And I'm honored to be here.
Keep fighting on the good fight.
Yes, thank
right.
you so much.
Thanks,
I enjoyed it.
Bye.
Thank you.